Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Honorable Members, for the questions and comments that have been made. I think, let me start off by responding to the issue of enforceability of the Commission's recommendations, so that we all the National Fiscal Commission, in terms of its establishment, makes its recommendations to Parliament and provincial legislatures and organized local government. And the recommendations will then be processed by the Minister of Finance together with on behalf of government. And when the Minister of Finance tables the budget, he must table with the Division of Revenue Bill an explanatory memorandum that explains how he has taken the Commission's recommendations into consideration. Now, in that explanatory memorandum, the Minister will say whether he has accepted the recommendation or he has not accepted the recommendation and provide reasons as to why. Now, as a Commission, once we have checked our recommendations, our expectation is that they are now owned by Parliament. The discussion around whether they will be implemented or not now is an issue that must be settled between the legislature and the executive. It's no longer a concern of the fiscal commission, except in as far as Parliament or the executive request from the commission for further clarity or for assistance in implementing certain of those recommendations. I think that is a process that, from where we sit as the Financial and Fiscal Commission, has worked very well. We just recently had our 20th anniversary conference, and we had actually commissioned a paper, an independent assessment of the Commission's recommendations and how they've been dealt with the government over the past 20 years of the existence of the Commission. And we are not very disappointed in the outcome. So, it's really up to Parliament, and from our side as a Commission, what we need to be making sure is that the kind of recommendations that we make to Parliament are recommendations that speak to what Parliament basically would like to utilize in interrogating the financial and fiscal issues relating to the implementation of the mandate. I can't actually give you any more. I don't think that the Commission requires any further powers than what it currently has in terms of ensuring that it alone. It's really about the credibility of the recommendations that we must worry about as a Commission, and we strive to make sure that the recommendations that we make actually add value to processes that our primary stakeholders, Parliament and the legislatures, must actually utilize. So I think that's my answer to that question. Broadly speaking, as it has been asked by a number of members. The issue around the Gini coefficient, this is really a matter of choice. And I think what I need to say is that there's quite a number of these measures of income distribution. And broadly speaking, the Gini coefficient has got very serious weaknesses. For example, if you compare it with the three-year index, for example, which looks at income distribution across people, but also looks at other attributes for people. Now, the Gini coefficient's biggest challenge is that it aggregates everything and treats everybody as if they are actually starting from the same point. So you compare somebody with a Ferrari and say, you know, there's these people with Ferraris, it's like this number of people, and then only a few people have got Ferraris, but the rest of the people have not even a bicycle. And then you then have a conversation around income distribution on the basis of that. So the Gini coefficient actually does that. So whilst it's an easier index to work with, which is what probably the most popular, it is actually not the best index that you can use to determine or decide on policies that have an impact on the people that you want to impact on, because you want to know exactly what the attributes of your poor people and different types of industries will give you those kinds of details, so you can actually have a conversation. This Gini coefficient, frankly speaking, is not like the best. the question around what would have contributed to it very lower, if it had actually come down, but it's still very high by international standards. It's still very high. Part of the reason is found in the grant system, the social grant system, and also the job creation measures. It's a very small contributor to that. The changes that have happened. But there's also been a structural change to ownership of wealth in South Africa, which has actually also contributed to the reduction of that. It's not that big. It's a small change, as the numbers basically to indicate that it's a very small change. So I can say that the social security grant system, or social assistance program, plays quite a significant role, not only in the sense of the direct money that you pay to individuals, but the fact that you actually allow people to send children to school who end up like getting jobs. Because that system actually does create those opportunities for people who ordinarily would not have been able to send their children to school. Coupled also with the programs around expansion of free education and all of those, and actually have allowed more people to get into the formal education system and they will be able to access jobs. So that's actually working towards addressing part of that anomaly in the income distribution patterns. The issue around the economic growth focus and optimism. I do agree with you that we are actually a very optimistic. Those figures are on the basis of the assumption that the kick up in the developed economy, which is the Eurozone and the United States, yields positive benefits for the South African economy in as far as its export for trade and balance is concerned. It is also premised on the fact that there will be no internal shocks, because the internal shocks that we had in this particular in the last year basically contributed to the reduction in the actual against the potential growth that has been projected. Now, the easiest way to actually see the optimistic in terms of the assumptions and then the actual outcomes would be to take a look at, let's say, maybe the past 3 years and see what the projections were in the MTBS period and what the actual outcome was. You will see that almost in every year, we have projected higher than what the actual outcome has been. So we have been very optimistic. So we've operated on the optimistic side in the hope that the negative shocks that the economy has faced, and they're beyond, generally they tend to be beyond the control of the people that actually make these projections. So the assumptions basically matter as a in terms of the projections that we have, we have our own assumptions, but if we look at what the Reserve Bank is projecting, what the IMF has projected, what Reuters has projected, and what the National Treasury has projected, we don't think that we are actually too far away from what everybody else is looking at. Obviously, the underlying part is that if the downside risk actually materialized, and that is where the issues around Russia and Brazil on the one side, and then China and India on the other side, because they seem to be also moving towards consumption type of spending as opposed to investment. So that is a challenge that we have to live with, but we still are of the view that the deterioration on that side is not actually or that big enough to actually result in negative outcomes for South Africa, at least in the short to medium term, that should not be such a big concern from where we are sitting. you, Honorable Chair, on the development and the evolution and stability of the Department of Economic Development. That's probably how I understood you to say. Now, I think the Chairperson partially answered the question. This department was established probably at the wrong time in the economic cycle. And it was not the only one that was established at that particular point. There were pressing issues that required very direct kind of attention. You see, the Department of Economic Development is supposed to be focusing on the micro foundations of our macroeconomic policy. It must make the macroeconomic policies realistic at the ground level. And I think there was a question about the intergovernmental fiscal relations aspect of it. That is where the gist of it actually resides. Because if the Department of Economic Development can't coordinate, and the operative way is coordinate, the activities of municipalities and the provinces and national government, then there is a problem. I must tell you, last week I spent some time with a forum for municipal managers in Mexico, also speaking to them about some of the challenges that local government faces. But one of the key things that came out of that discussion from municipal managers themselves was the lack of an interface, direct interface between and amongst three spheres of government when it comes to aligning development plans. That's, you know, municipalities are basically the center that must hold economic growth, etc. If municipalities are not working, then there's no economic growth that you can actually expect, because then it means you don't have safe communities, you don't have services, you don't have... So you can have all the big projects that you want, but if there's no that kind of a thing, and that probably would answer why some municipalities attract more investment than others. Those that don't work in order to attract investment. It's as simple as that. And so there is that need to actually get funding. You know, some of the municipal managers were raising issues about how do we link an ITP to the National Development Plan, for example. I mean, these are questions that should not be being asked at this particular point in time, because at the time of the diagnostic report, all of these questions are supposed to be at that particular point, if there was a real coordination in terms of how this process must unfold. So what I'm saying is that to stabilize, Honorable Chair, the department, for it for us to be able to say that now the department is stabilized, we should be in a position to see that the department has got, for example, a very direct program that we can, for example, as the National Fiscal Commission, that sits as the interface from an intergovernmental fiscal relations point of view, because when we deal with grants that must go to local government, there's a project that can identify to this municipality that will drive economic growth. Libalari, for example, is one such typical kind of growth. How do we link economic development objectives for the National Department of Economic Development to what is actually happening in Kuala, because say a city that is just emerging from nowhere. You don't want us to fail because the municipality does not have the capacity to do certain things, and so already you see some of the negative outcomes that are happening. So you see in the papers, you see the prostitutes starting to move in, and all of those types of things are issues that have to be dealt with in a very coordinated, directly coordinated way. So what I'm saying is that we can't say the time that this department now is stabilized. I mean, I think it has identified the programs that it needs to do. It still needs to consolidate how those programs are going to be rolled out, especially as far as coordinating economic development efforts for the country. I think that's the important thing that we need to keep in our minds. there were some questions that were asked by Honorable Murray around the employment numbers. I, Honorable Chair, with your permission, can I, because I don't want to, I want to do justice to these questions and actually give you a very detailed response on this thing, so I can actually submit with your permission, Chair, a written response to this, so that we can actually give you a full picture of the employment. And it will link also probably with the Chairperson's question around the role that the department has played in as far as job creation objectives are concerned. I think we can actually put that together and submit maybe a front page or something like that that will basically explain those issues. Let me not say in very great detail, but just to give you the highlights so that if you engage with the department, you are able to ask the questions that you want to ask. Honorable, there was a question around the private sector. Why the private sector not coming to the party in relative to government in terms of investment and the creation of jobs in South Africa? I think one of the if I just look at some of the bulletins that we actually get, if you look at confidence, it's still very low in South Africa. If you look at the business confidence index, you see that it's actually very low. So there is that skepticism about whether your investment is actually safe. What exactly are the real challenges that the environment might seem to be like that? It's not reassuring, probably, but from where we sit, we are of the view that what government decided to do in dealing with the global economic crisis, the counter-cyclical approach, is actually the approach to take. And so it is really up to the private sector to see the opportunities that are generated, because that gives government also the opportunity to modernize its infrastructure programs and infrastructure assets. And so one would expect that the private sector should actually respond in a positive fashion. And I am sure that it's a question of time, because there was also maybe a slow start to the rollout of the program itself, but we can see that that this is actually now started and probably there will be some more positive responses. So I can't actually give you an answer as to why the private sector is not actually responding the way in which it's supposed to be expected to respond. So I'm not going to answer the question about the jobs that are created and the salary levels and all of that. Those are really public service and administration type of questions, or what the Public Service Commission would probably be in a better position to answer on those. We just deal with the official numbers. There was a question which related to the authority of the Commission when it comes to national government. And I suspect that the question was really about what is the role of the Commission when there are performance or non-performance issues. I think the Commission's role is actually not a direct one when it comes to, because if a province is not performing, the expectation is that there will be support that will be provided by national government. But if that non-performance has not happened, then the Constitution provides for intervention through Section 100. If it's a province, then Section 139, if it's a municipality, there will be intervention. So those provisions, when they are utilized from the Commission, from our point of view as a Commission, that those provisions have to be utilized together with the provision that provides for assistance, so that we don't get to a point where intervention becomes necessary. if for example, I understood the question perfectly, what it had to do with the audit outcomes, international departments performing this way, but provincial departments performing that. It was a general, just temporary report here. Something, somebody must act on that. And when action is taken, the idea would be, because it's presented this year, someone must try and address it. Now, if it doesn't get addressed over a period of time, and I think National Treasury has a process around that, if you don't do this for this number of years in a row, then there's an intervention that must actually take place let's say if it's under financial statements or something like that, then they will decide it. So I'm saying it's a question of this whole provisions that must be looked at not in isolation, but for the commission, that's where the position is around like that. We don't have any authority to tell somebody where it is that we know where it is. Let me check whether there's anything else that I missed here. Except there are two questions that I prefer to use to the colleagues of mine so that they will also end their key. Let me ask Khalid first to respond to, I think it's two questions. Yeah, two questions and then that's all the response to the other one. There were two questions, three questions that were for the ISPAI members. And I was wondering, the first one we got is the allocation to Shifa, the reduction of 146 million rand. And the fact that there was an increase of pattern was observed over the 18th period. If we compare the allocations in this year's estimates of national expenditure, which is bigger than presented, of last year's figures, what we see is that over the 18th period is actually a reduction of 146 million. So, in 2015-2016, just to give an example, in last year's E&E, the Shifa was supposed to receive 502 million rand. But in this year's E&E, the allocation is 406 million rand. So, essentially, a reduction of almost a million rand in 2015-2016. Now, what impact will this have on SMEs? Shifa has a number of different income sources. They get their own income through their own means. They also receive funding from their subsidiary of the IBC. So they also sometimes receive funding from the IBC, and then of course they receive transfers from supporting economic development. Now, one would hope that the reduction of 146 million is being counterbalanced by increasing the revenue through other income sources. So that the impact on the provision of support to SMEs is not reduced. Now, SME development and SME support is one of the key priority for government, especially since they are genuine labor intensive nature, and therefore they tend to be important drivers of job creation. Now, if this 146 million is not being counterbalanced by other income sources, and there's no other material reason for the reduction, then of course it's a concern. So I think, essentially, at the moment what's happening is that because we have these departments have to prioritize within the baseline. So if there was increased spending in one area, they need to find funding in other areas in order to supplement that. However, given that this is a priority, it would be important question to ask the department where, in fact, the 146 million is being counterbalanced by increases in other sources of labor. In fact, it is just a step that's for the reduction.
And I also want to teach you the content. There used to be three entities before that relationship. It only started apart fairly new entity, which working together the pharma and IT world, your Kula and your small machine that you put in the IT team. So obviously even the financial structure would change. Because like the whole subsidiary of IT. So when you look at things, you must also bear in mind that that's the situation. The whole of the most part of 2013 financial year, they were really focusing on establishing the project. So you wouldn't expect that much expenditure in there on their side. But of course also, because of a couple of digitalization issues that are being redirected now from the department to the such the for the whole NPF, the department has budgeted for them, so this has to continue. But I guess it's going to be phased out as time goes on. And of course now the main source of funding will become better. But I think we should be able to understand that. And just want to keep that up there. We may continue and I'm giving you a few of hotel so that we can give that 25 minutes.
Just briefly on the engagement of the report.
Well, I was just getting insight from you. But I just want to be my father. Even at the time from measures, as of course, in that division and in the organization, I think that the main part of our just calling that amount, which is 100 million, it is a significant amount to be considered for the mission and for the purpose. I think I'm not expecting today, maybe we need to assume that for that me as an organization and me as a person that they were never going to pay for anything they would be able to spend. We don't want this amount of money to be able to return back. It means organizations inherit a lesser amount consistently for small businesses.
Yeah. I think the concerns we are having are the concerns that we have. I don't suppose that, or I don't mean, let me put it that way, that we are comfortable, but what I'm trying to get at is that you get that information at the back of your mind. But at the same time, also acknowledge the fact that we just had a briefing from the department around it, the specific matter, and it was explained. And I think the same way here, she did explain why we have that kind of variance. She did explain it. And maybe you somehow forgot some of the issues that were so I don't want us to bear in the FFC here with that information, whereas we did get information from the department. I was trying to clarify that matter. If you still feel not satisfied with it, I think we will have to have a one-on-one with the CFO on that. Issues of SMME, financing and development. I think we've dealt with them and these are issues that we really, all of us, have interest in, that there is growth towards that. May I give you to
them? So just briefly, with regard to the Indian expenditure question, underlying Indian expenditure is a spending plan that the department has in place in terms of our allocating additional resources to the different internet as well as the transfers. I think what's important to look at is the evolution of the English training plan. And what we noticed is that in 2012-2013, we noticed that in February, for example, and March, there's a significant spike in spending. And if you compare it to 2013-2014, essentially that spike has been pushed back to November, December. And the question to ask is why is that the case? Also, if you look at the peaks that we completed between 2013, 14 to 2012, 2013, I think essentially you're not saying that there won't be months where your spending is going to be higher than other months. What I think is really different here is that the erratic expenditure pattern in 2013, 14 compared to 2012, 2013, where expenditure peaks were much lower than in 13, 14.
I don't know if you also have to respond quickly. So then just a quick question that you asked about the telephone slide between the last bullet point, about the performance indicators not clearly shown in alignment. What our analysis shows is that because these indicators are all new, we think that it will be more useful to increase transparency and assist oversight if they were a bit more smart, like specific time bound, etc. Right now they're really vague and we don't know which macro development plan they take their cue from. So there's one example there about six methodologies developed and applied. That is not a smart indicator, it's not specific, measurable, time bound, etc. So that is the basic. Yes,
thank you very much. I think really this shouldn't be the last time we interact. I think we'll have to call you back so that we finish also our questions and the discussion we discussed there, because I think it's very key in making us understand the type of work that we're doing and also in educating us on some of the areas of your work. Especially on this one, I think if we can, by the way, what's your name again? Sasha, through you, Chair, I think, please, if you can, especially I'm very much interested in this alignment issue, because that forms core of the work that we do, and unless we have that, I think we'll be understanding ATPs and the stress and, you know, differences, and if she explains now, I begin to understand what she means, but if you can just draft one or two pages to that regard, and then maybe in our next meeting we can be able to talk better and discuss better around the issues. And then we'll share with all other members the issues that we should be raising. Otherwise, thank you very much, and our apologies for the limited time. We normally don't spend as much time. It shows you know, the size and quality of the people we have here, that we are much more engaged and so forth. So next time we'll have to have only you as we used to do before, so that we are able to have enough time. And thank you otherwise, Ray, for your time and your presentation. Thank you. You're welcome to remain if you want to, but you are actually spent the technology. Okay. Thank you. That is Yanis. Come in.
On a lighter note, I noted that only the chairperson from the SSG touched our food there. I did not see that she touched anything. We need to review our diet. That's one of the light and
light. That's taken. I did not notice. I just welcome. I just invited everyone to have the food, but. It might be that they had food before they left their place. Now that we're done with the FFC, maybe we then go to the office of the Auditor General. I don't know if he's waiting up. Is it you?
Thank you, Honourable Chairs and members. My name is Lois von Friede. I'm the business executive in order to general responsible for amongst others the EDG for the project. I'll also be assisted today by my colleague Mr. Ahmed Mullah, who directly responsible for the audit of the Department of Economic. very much for time to engage with you, and I agree with the statement that you made earlier on that today we said we must do it in a workshop format. Unfortunately, we're a bit pressed for time, but I mean, if there's any need in future for us to have any further engagement, you know, we would gladly do that. We would like to keep up the session with a 10-minute video presentation, because the rest of our presentation will deal with the key concepts that are also highlighted in that video presentation. Basically, what we would like to do is we would like to familiarize members with, first of all, the mandate of the Auditor General, what is it that we do, what are the different products that we deliver, and then we would like also to have an understanding of what is in an audit report, what are the concepts in an audit report, how do you deal with the concepts in an audit report, what does a qualified audit opinion mean, what does a disclaimer mean, because in your role as oversight, you're going to have to engage on those various topics. One of the key oversight functions that are coming up, it's early October, is the Libra for R, where you're going to do the budget reviews, and during those discussions, we will be presenting to you the audit outcomes for 13, 14. We cannot present it at this point in time because all the reports have not yet been tabled. So we will then discuss with you the audit outcomes for 13, 14, and I hope is that after our engagement today, you will be much more comfortable to then engage on the actual contents of the audit report. So we've given a lot of information today. We've even given you a mock audit report that you can read through to get to know some of the concepts. There's also, for instance, one slide which Ami will show to you, which will focus you on the detail of what is it that you look for during budget review process. Then there's also a handout, which the handout is called Understanding the Briefing Process of Audit Outcomes, and it says Notes on Presentation. This is 3 pages that you can fold up and keep in your pocket. It's really going to help you going forward, because if you have a look at it, it quickly tells you again what is an audit report about, it quickly then tells you what is an emphasis of matter, and there was a question earlier on today about emphasis of matter, and I'm going to clarify it for you now. It will quickly tell you again what is an additional matter, so that when you see all these things in the audit report, you can quickly take out this reference document and quickly focus on it. For instance, we take this document takes you to, if you look at an annual report of an entity, what is in that annual report for you to focus on? Because you see documents like this, you can't read every page. But we will focus you in there, it's a report of the audit committee. You want to know what is in there, important information you need. You want to look at the report of the auditor general, you want to look at the predetermined objective. This document focuses you on that. And for instance, at the last page you will see, right in the right hand box, there's number 8, it says more criteria. You will hear us talking about lots of acronyms, and we try to explain them to you as we go along. And there, because for instance, highlight you what does this smart criteria mean? In the previous presentation, there was a comment made about the performance information of EDV, and there was reference made to the smart principles. Here, the smart principles highlighted for you what does it actually stand for. So, I think that this document can help you a lot going forward. Before we switch on the video presentation, let me quickly clarify to you, there was a question made about the emphasis of matter in EDD, because the emphasis of matter made in the 12-13 audit reports. First of all, an emphasis of matter is not negative reporting. Emphasis of matter, we use in an audit report to merely highlight something which has already been adequately disclosed in the financial statement. So it's not negative reporting, it's very emphasized something. So the emphasis of matter in 12-13 in the EDD's audit report was an emphasis to say, look at no so and so in the financial statements, the entity made material adjustments to the prior years. And it's adequately disclosed. So as an auditor, I don't have any problem with what they've done there, I'm just highlighting it. They might change the last year's figures, so when you look at the financial, be careful, don't look at last year's report, look at this year's report, because the changes have been made in there. Anyway, some questions raised about the environment specific and with regards to outcomes. My suggestion would be, they got discussed now, 12-13 outcomes, it's historic. The 13-14 outcomes will be available in the next couple of weeks. Audits have been done. Entities are busy printing reports that will be tabled soon, end of September, if all of them must be tabled. Let's then focus on the current. valid ground concern. That's what we will come and visit you for the details of our negotiation technical practice with the outcomes, the root causes for the outcomes, the internal control deficiencies attached to the those outcomes. That will enable you to focus for your rest of your year in terms of evidence of ground concern. Now, I'll be to the presentation.
Million bank of million rand. The Ministry of Finance presents a budget of well over 1 trillion rand every financial year. A trillion rand equals a million bags of a million rand each. Imagine all these bags locked in a room, uncared for what? This responsibility is ours, as the Auditor General of South Africa. Our job is to strengthen the country's democracy through the auditing of the country's public finances. We wonder what happens to these million bags of a million rand over the period in which they were earmarked. Usually a year. It is the expectation of the public that all practical and possible measures are taken to protect and use these bags for the purpose intended. In the broadest form, members of the public contribute towards these bags. The money contained in these bags is intended to do the things that improve people's lives, making sure that clinics and hospitals are stocked with relevant supplies and medication, that our schools are books so that our children can learn, and that pensions of many grandmothers in our country are paid at the end of each and every month. How much of good is intended with the money in these bags? And keeping track of such money is a big and important task. There are other levels of responsibility that we have as a country, and these may not necessarily seem like they are for more benefit. When some citizens break the law, the people required to intervene. The money in the public purse is there to ensure your rights as an individual are protected. The money in those million bags looks after this fight. Our country needs to be protected from perceived harm from outside elements, and some of this money is used to provide this service. Through the betrayal of personnel, facilities and upgrades, or for your benefit. Some of our people cannot provide for themselves, but they may be too young, too weak, or incapable of various reasons. We look at the provision for this sector in society, so social security and related services are significant components of these minimum bags. Basic needs of life like shelter, water, food, sanitation, roads, and life would not be affordable if we were expected to pay our own way. Some of these bags are earmarked for this purpose, without which basic services would not be provided for, potentially leading to serious and grave situations. It's our responsibility to ensure that our future generations are cared for, and for this we make provision for the preservation of the environment. This will benefit those who come after us. Some of our million bags would look after this. These bags are further given to the various municipalities and provincial government to do the things that benefit our communities at large through the various services we receive from them. Sometimes at this point of arrival, things tend to fall apart. These bags need to keep on flowing to take care of all the necessary things that make life as we know it. How did the Office of the Auditor General reach the conclusion of how each municipality or government department or entity has fared on the use of the million bags of a million rand? The answer leads to five types of audit conclusions contained in our analysis and accounting, or as we refer to them, our general reports. An unqualified audit with no findings, which is usually referred to as a clean audit, is when a municipality or government department has conducted the way it manages the finances well and transparently. They are aimed to show the things that were done, and they respected and observed all the laws. They have controlled the place which enabled them to do their job well, and that their use of the resources provided by the million bank and the million rand is largely reliable and critical. Secondly, we issue an unqualified audit opinion with other matters or findings. This is when the municipality or government department is good at keeping the books. Unfortunately, they have neglected to check if the services they paid for have been received or done. They didn't necessarily do things in accordance with the laws that affect financial management matters. Quite a number of these required significant levels of assistance during the examination of their records. Without this assistance, they would have scored worse. In the third instance, a qualified audit is as follows. Here we find those government entities that do not keep accurate and transparent records in limited or isolated areas and have not ensured that they got what they paid for or acted in accordance with the laws that affect financial management matters. Our fourth category is the same as the third, except that these departments and municipalities have been unsuccessful in almost all areas of their operations. This is an adverse audit opinion. Finally, in the fifth category, we find those they are so uncountable that they are unable to show most of the things they claim to have done in the bags. Nothing they have done makes sense, and nobody knows what's happened to the bank. The auditor in this instance cannot comment hence the disclaimer of the audit opinion. Communication with those charged with governance and oversight. We communicate and inform those responsible for the million bags and advise them what caused the bags to not do what they were made available for. You then pass on the messages to those charged with looking after and securing the bags. The current picture is that in some cases, not much has been done to meet the promises. On the upside, others have met their share of commitment, and we commend them for building reliable systems and processes to meet their promises. While the above conclusions have been reached, it is disappointing to note that a lot of these acts have been used to promote unfair advantages and undesirable activities, resulting in irregular and unauthorized expenditure. This is where many of the bags are found to have been used in ways that were not originally intended for when the bags were made available to the public purse. This offends our sense of what is just and fair, and deal with the telling blow to the principles stated in our constitution and general law that govern public life. Limitations of an audit. These outcomes are observed and examined in an environment where auditors have limitations. At times, they are not able to examine all the records, and so upon their judgment after they have taken into account other information and knowledge which they obtain through other work in an audit. They do not profess to give absolute conclusion on the evidence they obtain through their test, but can be relied upon for a strong element of assurance in matters of integrity, governance, and accountability. The standards they apply to the records they examine carry a strong branding across many parts of the world. Any user of this information is assured that appropriate diligence as provided for in these standards have been applied and tried, and tested methods of independent examination have been employed. Root causes of the audit outcomes. It is established through analysis of all the information and financial statements reported on that there are significant root causes of the poor outcomes. Focused attention to the following areas of financial management will create a transparent and accountable execution of work. 1. We need to employ people in financial functions who have the required skills to manage finances and maintain an environment where all the records are accurate, reliable, and credible. 2. Key vacancies need to be filled, especially in the financial service delivery system. 3. There needs to be consequences due to an undesirable audit to make sure that significant breakdowns in controls do not continue uncorrected. 4. Lastly, there needs to be a system that makes sure that those charged with oversight and governance of the entity have the ability to correct the situation. The current difference of the above conditions and others in any system is an indispensable part of restoring public confidence. Those charged with public affairs need to restore public confidence in their ability to look after the assets and benefits that flow from the exercise of their stewardship. When the above root causes are addressed, we should be able to experience public service that boasts the following. A. Proper record keeping. B. Performance of daily and monthly routine controls. C. Production of regular and accurate financial and performance reports. E. Active review and monitoring of compliance. Currently, these key attributes are largely absent from the control environment of most of the entities we audit. Hence, the conclusion we have reached points to the vulnerability of these million bags of million money. The journey of restoring public confidence in the system of public administration, particularly financial and supply chain management, is ever more important in all the three spheres of government. Transparency and accountability are an indispensable part of this journey. If these are in place and all do the right thing, it is possible that resources we command as a society are more than enough to achieve most of the aspirations we work and live to see realized. Auditor General of South Africa, auditing to build public confidence.
Compliments especially that artist.
The presentation is done. Mr. Pantre, I thought that was the whole presentation. No, we definitely have it because it explains everything I wanted members to understand. It just, it even goes beyond that because it just also indicates beyond that. I have done 200 pages. Unless you have one or two things to add them, Domina?
Chairperson, I think if you, we are very happy about the feedback. It's a trial on some of our other committees that was under the feedback, so it's really great to have that feedback. And I think specifically, there is a detailed presentation on here. But what we can do is, Chairperson, if you want to, I can add one or two key things for you in these slides, which I think members maybe want to take note of. Like I said, we are made, but if you want us to go detail for our spend an half an hour again on certain key issues, we can do that. Otherwise, if members have now those specific questions, we must then gladly ask us those questions.
Thank you very much. I think, colleagues, while I requested the Auditor General to come before we even deal with the financial year outcome, that is the audit statement, because I wanted them to give us an understanding of what is the role of the Auditor General's office, what are they doing, how are they doing it, give us an explanation, how do they differ from the Treasury Department, for instance, because some people, you know, tend to confuse the Auditor General with the Finance Department, whereas these are two different institutions. The other one is the government department, the other one is an institution on its own, governed by its own law. So it is important that we differentiate that. And I think they did that work very well by, you know, that should be given to our people. If that advert can be run around the country, I think people will understand even how to come in terms of holding government accountable and so forth. Thank you very much. I think you must congratulate your boss on our behalf, the AG, and yourself, obviously, as the people running around on his behalf. They will still come back just to give us how the department performed in the previous financial year. Then we'll be able then to interrogate. What I like, the fact that they produce this document for us. Please, colleagues, let's go and read. Let's read them so that when they come back, then you are able to ask them questions based on what they have put. So this is very clear. You know, they start from what is required by the Act, what is required for them to do by the Act, and then they go up to the end. And to me, that is a lot of information. Unless you go through it, you won't understand, and you won't be able then to follow up the questions when they come back. Is it fair to say that the work is done? It is. Thank you very much. Mr. Muller is the one that's doing the actual auditing of the department. He's attached to the EDG department, so he has the insight of everything, and Mr. Van Buren is the coordinator. So, sort of the supervisor, what they used to call them, supervisors. So, I think they are here, they are always here, perhaps they can even give you their business card if they do have them with them, so that you can be able to follow up. Let's interact with them, let them educate us, so that we can become better people. I think there was a hint here. Yes, about that.
I wanted to check if the CD is available, because it looks very occasional.
Yeah. You know what the minister, the former minister and the president of Trevor did? I think when they came with the NCT as its transport from that time up to the last, they produced the what you call it? Yeah? What you call it? They have the memory stick that they provided every member. I think we should do the same. And it has all the things and then the information. They started when they were doing the diagnosis of the problems within the South African
set up. And when they came up with the plan, also they gave us the birthday memory. If you could request the audition to do that also. Others, of course, they still they used a CD, but you still don't need to use the old, a bit of old version. I'll just say. So with memory CD, you can even do while you're in the plane. Something that's interesting. So, now that's the issue. Small little memory CD. They're cheaper than the CD also. Thank you very much, Mr. Santorin, for the work done and all the best in your work. I know it's a challenging time for you, but we really appreciate your time here. And, I hope you took the note and you're ready for the next session. Remember, I just want to have one or two announcements with me before you leave. Just to indicate to FFC reports to Parliament. Why I'm calling them here is because it's supposed to guide us. But then if there are issues that need to be interrogated even further, that maybe the speaker is not satisfied with, the speaker will then appoint another committee to deal with those issues. I got things like we are interrogating them. Than getting, you know, information. They ask us just to do their work in terms of how they analyze the situation, and then they produce a report on an annual basis. If you want the report that they have produced so far, what they do normally they do is prior to the minister, the budget process is done, so that they can guide as to what issues, for instance, if it's related to social development issues, they will tell you the grant, which grant is. It's a very, very informative document that if you go through it, you'll begin to understand the policy direction that government is taking. Start from there, then the economic issues also will deal with them. So let's visit that document. This came with annually to Parliament because they are required, they are obligated to do so by the Constitution. So we need to visit to that so that as we interact with them, we confine ourselves to issues that they are really in their job discussion. So I'll just appeal to that. Secondly, colleagues, as I have announced previously in a previous meeting, our workshop, remember we attend the workshop for the committee, where in different events that will be coming, we have presenters given economic, who are the economic experts, let me say so, will be coming in and talking to us. Then there was 2 days. Initially, I was it would be 3 days, but due to members, we know that we are all busy, we just limited it to 2 days. There was supposed to be this coming weekend, Friday, Saturday, now 9:30. So I'm appealing to you colleagues. Let's appeal ourselves for the 19th and the 20th. We're going to a very outside Parliament, so it will also be going out and an opportunity to interact and to know each other better than when we're in this working environment. They will be in a very relaxed environment. And we also have an opportunity of knowing Cape Town, because some of us think Cape Town is just around here. Not. There's so much to do around Cape Town. Let's go there and see Cape Town, but above all, let's learn. Go there to learn about what economics are all about, whether they agree, whether they don't agree in approaches. They do so sometimes. I think they are also and they talk. So let's go and interact with them. Let them teach us. Let's teach them also one or two things that we know. Broadening our scope of understanding and the knowledge of economics. So I'm appealing to your full attendance. We'll have the department also, the minister, the minister will be there because we want to understand exactly what are they doing, what approach are they taking,
we ask them, we have an opportunity then to ask them, you know, without being limited by, you know, time, the children and so forth. So let's go there and try it. We will give you updates in terms of the travel arrangements. You know, maybe travel together. If that is a matter, because you might be living next to the area we're going to. And then the scheduling time and just the all those logistical information you'll get them during the course of the week. Otherwise, if there are no questions. Otherwise, thank you very much, colleagues, for your attendance and your participation. Have a lovely the rest of the day. Love, and love.